Meanwhile, the White Sox beat the Yankees 5-1. The Sox, Brewers, and Cubs all continue their respective series tonight. The WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service, mostly sunny skies today, but we do have a 40% chance of seeing some rain and storms late this afternoon and early tonight. Today's high 83, an overnight low of 62. For tomorrow, increasing clouds, a high of 84. The five-day weather trend calls for another chance of showers and storms on Friday. Highs holding in the 80s. Right now, 70 with a west wind at 8 miles an hour. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I am sitting opposite someone I have known for a long, long time and worked with on many, many occasions, Doug Instanis, a familiar voice to many of you who listen to the Morning Show regularly. Doug is the managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild, and it was 30 years ago this year that Doug was hired by the Racine Theater Guild. And so there is one milestone right there, but there is another that's also worth observing and celebrating, namely that Doug is about to direct his 100th production at the Racine Theater Guild. And it's of a delightful play called The Cemetery Club. And I believe, coincidentally, it was the first play that Doug directed at the Theater Guild. So there's a lovely sense of things coming full circle with this production that will be opening fairly soon. So we thought it would be a good opportunity to bring Doug in on the morning show, not only to talk about this upcoming season and a little bit about the Cemetery Club, but also to look back over three eventful decades in which he has been a part of the Racine Theater Guild. So Doug Instanis, we welcome you to the morning show, and thank you for getting up early today.
Good morning. Three decades. That makes, I don't like that intro so much. It sounds really old.
Oh, well, it's a long time, and it's a huge legacy. So it's something worth talking about. First of all, because I have a feeling we may run out of time, let's talk for a moment about Cemetery Club. You're right in the middle of rehearsals right now. I mean, this is a little earlier than we would typically talk about a play. That's usually we speak right on the sort of the eve of its opening. We're not there quite yet, right?
No, it opens the 15th, so we have a little bit of well, September 15th. So we have a little bit of time yet. So, yeah, it's a wonderful, charming story. And, of course, because it was the first play I directed at the Theater Guild, I have fond memories. And, you know, you look back a long time ago and say, boy, was I young back then. So it's a play about older people, which I am now. When I was in my 30s and I directed it, I probably didn't have a clue about what those people were going through, and now it's part of my life. So three Jewish New Yorkers, ladies, who have lost their husbands, meet once a month to go to the cemetery and pay their respects. So it's a cemetery club. And all three women are in different stages of grief, moving on, things like that. Doris is has a line where, I've given everything, we gave everything to each other, I have nothing to give to another man. And Lucille is mad because her and her husband were having some issues and they didn't get resolved before he died. And so she's got some anger things, and she pretends to move on and she pretends to be okay, but she's not. And then Ida's wondering about, you know, maybe it's time to go and see someone and live your life. And doesn't mean I would love my husband any less. It just means that I'm not going to shut myself off from, you know, having a wonderful life. And, you know, and it sounds pretty heavy, but it's really funny. It's a very, very funny play about friendship and about love and about moving on and the crazy things we do with family. And so it's a kind of a play that I like the most. It's very funny, but heartwarming, and has something that everybody can relate to. One of the things I was excited about is when we read this on Play Reading, the younger people liked it. And I was like, really? You like a play about, and you're not even going to be cast in it because they're all over 50. And they thought it was charming, sweet, wonderful. So it's excited to relive something where I have some memory of the first time around, but a lot of productions have come and gone since then. And as we're going through this, it's like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember what we did here or what's going on. But I have a new cast. They bring new ideas. They're very creative and fun. So it's fun. It's exciting to come back and, you know, relive your past.
So am I correct that it's a complete coincidence in terms of its opening this season, and it's the 100th, but it's also your first? That's just
it is
all coincidence.
I knew I was getting up into the 90s because someone had asked me, and, you know, you just do a rough math. I did 2 for the first 8 years, then 4 for, you know, after that, and somewhere up there. And but then I said, well, maybe I should just count this. So we have a green room wall that has all the shows in it, and it took me about 5 times to get the, because one, it was 101, and then it was 99, and then it was 98, and 103, and it just, so finally I got it right. I'm like, really? That's just weird that just happened to be that way. We thought Cemetery Club would be a good opening show, and it just worked out that I would be directing it again, and just
there
it was
you
100.
Are.
So,
I'm just curious, when you're counting 100. For instance, when we did Annie and repeated it, or when we did Oliver and we repeated it,
that
are you counting? Okay, so yeah. it's every production, even if it's a musical we just did, or right. in this case, it's you're doing the Cemetery Club
again.
So
that would be twice, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Just because it's a different cast. And
oh, yeah.
You know, it's not a remount. It's not like doing something in September and then at Christmas, which would be a remount, so that wouldn't count. But
right.
if it's a different cast and
well, and it's you're still rehearsing, and right. you're still doing all the work of directing. So, yeah, that's absolutely the way it should be counted. So, well, very good. And I agree with you. I think my favorite kind of comedies are not comedies that are just funny, but comedies that have some emotional substance. But I have to say, I mean, I've heard that this play is really funny. And as you're describing it, I didn't expect for there to be the substance that you are describing. And in particular, I'm impressed by the notion of three vividly distinct perspectives on what it means to be a widow. I mean, and there's
right.
a lot of ways to walk that path. It's not all the same. And I think maybe one mistake that people who aren't in that situation make is they kind of clump all widows together,
right?
Whatever makes sense to them, and it's there's a lot of different ways to experience that and live that.
And there's a line in the show later on where everybody's, of course, trying to convince the others of their point of view. You know, that, well, you need to play the field, one says. The other one is, this is embarrassing yourself. You shouldn't do this. And the other one is saying, you know, I just would like to have someone touch me again, you know. And and so everybody's trying to make their case. And then, you know, later on in the play, it says, you know what? You do what's right for you, and I'll do what's right for me. And I think that sums it up. And there's a lot of ways people deal with grief, and what's right for one person is not right for someone else. And I think that's why I think this play has such universal feel to it, because we can see, even though they're distinctly Jewish people from New York, I think we can see many of the experiences that we go through or our family go through. You can see that. You know, everybody's lost somebody in their life. It's a friend or a family member or a colleague or something. And, you know, how do we honor them, honor their memory, and move on? You know, this is, I get very emotional about this play because some of the cast members from the first production have passed. And some of them are very ill, or they have family members that are very ill. And so when I think of them, I have joy, but I also have sadness. On opening night of 1993, when I did this, they gave me a stone angel as a director's gift. Uh-huh. Well, that stone angel has been by my fireplace on every house that I've had or in my entryway for the last 30 years. And, you know, when I look at it, I think of some of the people that passed. I'm getting emotional just thinking about it, too, you know, and that they're not going to be there for opening night. They're not going to be able to, you know, see this or, you know, be part of it. And that's the beauty and the sadness of community theater, where, you know, such a wonderful experience, and now people have moved on, and they've gotten older, and some of them have passed or moved to Florida or have family members that are really ill and can't participate anymore. A lot of emotions going on with me in rehearsal.
Sure. Well, and particularly when we're talking about the span of 30 years, I won't say three decades anymore.
Thank you.
But 30 years, over the course of 30 years. I mean, that's, I mean, it's the same thing when you teach at a college.
Absolutely.
For 30 years, and you're lining up for the baccalaureate procession, and you are suddenly realizing how close you are to the front of the line and how beloved members of the faculty are no longer a part of the community, at least in the here and now. And time marches on.
Right.
And that's certainly a message of the Cemetery Club. More of a mundane question. As you return to this play, and I get the sense that doesn't happen a whole lot. I mean, we can maybe talk about that, how common it is to return to a play that the Guild has already done. It obviously does happen. So, for instance, in this case, how are you approaching this, apart from the fact that your own perspective gives you a certain understanding of the characters and what they're going through that you probably didn't have 30 years ago? But otherwise, in what way does this feel like a very different endeavor for you, or does it feel pretty much the same?
No, it is very different, because I was a hotshot college kid with my MFA and some professional experience. So, you know, I know it all when you're young, right? And I had a very different directing style than Norm McPhee prior to me. Norm was a very specific kind of what we call outside-in type of director-actor, where, you know, was very specific about certain things, and that helps the actor develop. I was more of a inside-out type of person, where, how are we feeling now? And, you know, this earthy, crunchy stuff that, you know, you learn in grad school. And I remember the cast looking at me with, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, because they were used to a different style. Now, both styles are right. They're just different. You know, everybody has a different style. So over the last 30 years, I've really known how to work with community people, what's expected of me as a director, what they need. I'm less worried about time, because I know I'm more patient in the sense that I know we're going to get to where we're going to get, instead of not knowing these people. You know, I know people now. I've seen them on stage. I'm confident in what they can do. Coming into school and coming from school and not knowing anybody, it's like, oh, will they ever learn their lines? Oh my goodness, you know. And I'm in fear, and probably had a lot less fun in rehearsal the first time around. Very serious. This is serious business. We're doing theater, and we're going to be this way. So I think I've learned a lot over the years. I've learned a lot from the different actors and what they expect from me. And I think they're more comfortable with me, too. I think worst thing an actor can do is be scared, that they don't have confidence. And I think early on, people looked at me and said, is he going to direct me? You know, right now, I'm kind of just doing this and that, and they feel uncertain. And so I think now people are more confident in me. So anyway, it's just it's a different thing. We have a different set, different cast, people bringing different skills. I didn't keep my old scripts. So, and we don't have a videotape of the show. We have some pictures that captured fun moments that I remember. But it's all new. We're just trying new things and different people and bring different skills. So, but the feeling's the same. I remember this moment, and I remember some of the audience reaction when things happened, and how this play can make you laugh one minute and then cry the next, and then how gifted the writing is, where you know, we're in a sad moment, and then they throw in a punchline just because they know the audience needs that.
So it sounds like this is expertly crafted.
It is. It's you know, it sounds very sweet and simple, but it's not. It's you know, people are nervous. They're you know, and it's funny because I love this play, and I was, you know, 30-some years old when I directed it, and now I'm 60-some years old, and I still love it.
So. That says something about the play. And just to reiterate, we're not talking about the Cemetery Club on the eve of its opening night. So I think you said September 15th?
Yes.
And I assume it runs for several weekends?
Three weekends after that.
Okay.
Right.
And that kicks off then this next season of the Receipt. Well, actually, Rent kicked it off, didn't it?
It did, but we have our subscription season starts in September.
Gotcha.
So there's still time to get your season tickets.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking on today's morning show with Doug Instanis, who is managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild, and the production that we've been talking about of The Cemetery Club. And by the way, who is The Cemetery Club by? I meant to ask you about it's funny how it seems like some famous plays, they should be it's like the title and the playwright's name just rattle off, and in this case I don't think it does.
It doesn't.
It's maybe
and is
like a one work wonder, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've even Menschel. M-E-N-C-H-E-L-L. Yeah. Evan Menschel.
So, well, he got it right at least once.
Yeah,
so
he did.
Evan Menschel, the Cemetery Club opens on September 15th. It's the 100th production that Doug Instanis has directed at the Racine Theater Guild, and it's also the first play that he directed at the Guild when he began there 30 years ago. So, Doug, take us back to 1993 when you were first hired. So, first of all, we've already heard that you were a young hotshot.
In my own mind.
Yeah, right. So tell us from where you had just graduated and kind of where you were at your life when you, I assume, heard about this position being open at the Guild.
I was, my wife and I graduated with Master's of Fine Arts degrees from Ohio University, and we were working in the D.C. area. I was working at Arena Stage, and she was at Washington Opera, and I had done a stage management internship. Part of my degree was in stage management and directing, so I was able to get and then I was hired on to run props and things, an assistant stage manager on their main stage show, and Kim was assistant shop manager at Washington Opera. And we liked D.C., and it was fun, and But at some point we decided, well, you know, we want to have a family. And, you know, back then, a crappy little apartment was $1,000 a month. That's 30 years ago. And the schools, you had to put in private schools and all this. And we had family back in the Midwest. So an opening came at Parkside for a designer, shop manager, teacher. Judy Tucker Snyder was taking a sabbatical. And so we said, hey, we can come back to Wisconsin, be close to our family. And our first mortgage on our house was $500 a month compared to $1,000 a month for rent in a bad area. So we decided to move back, be closer to family. I freelanced as a director for a while. I was a company manager at a dance company. And then the associate artistic director, director of marketing job opened up at the Theater Guild. And Mike Klickner, who was working with my wife at the time at Parkside, said, oh, your husband should apply for that. So I did. And I was hired as associate artistic director and marketing. So I directed a couple plays a year and then did marketing and development, grant writing, things like that for 8 years. And then Norm retired and I took over for him.
So when this job was posted, was it a position that had already been, did it all, this position already exist? I mean, did you have a predecessor in this position, or were they maybe cobbling a couple of positions together or creating something that had not existed?
Larry Summers had this job for 2 years. Norm used to do it all. And then at some point, I don't even know why, they decided to add a couple shows and expand the season, you know, opportunities and things. And so they took on an associate director. And I think Larry was here for 2 years prior. So it was a fairly new position. Norm had been a one-man band for 25 years prior to that, I think.
And, pretty amazing.
and did it all by himself and built the building. And then they started adding more activities and took on an associate director.
When you took the position, when it was offered to you and you accepted it, were there aspects of the job that excited you and other parts that worried you, or did you feel like this was a really perfect fit right from the start?
Well, the directing is what I was interested in the most, and being part of a theater and not have to go from place to place to place to place. Most, you know, most theater people go from theater to theater, from city to city, and I really wanted to have a home and a community and be a part of that, and the directing was the main part of that. The press releases and the writing was my least favorite because I am not a good speller. And this is actually before all the spell checks. You know, we were just in the beginning ages of the computer. Thank God for the computer.
Yeah.
And so my dad was a proofreader for many years, an editor. So early on in my career, I would write the press releases early enough that I could send it to him so he could proof it for me before I gave it to Norm to look at to make sure that I was doing it correctly. But you know, I think it was just the writing that I didn't like, the working with the artists, the posters, the even grant writing, fundraising, all that stuff. You know, the other management was fine. It was just the actual writing of press releases that, you know, and then shortly after that, you get very confident. Once, you know, it's a formula type of thing and, you know, how you write it and what you do and all of that. But it was exciting for me because I was learning a lot. Norm taught me a lot. He'd been doing it by himself for such a long time that the Theater Guild had many successful ways of doing it already. I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. I could kind of just learn and then tweak and then tweak and then, you know, things change over time. And so it was an exciting time for me. I got to be part of a theater family right away, a well-established one. I stayed.
So it was 8 years you were in that position until Norm McPhee's retirement. Can you just say a word about your partnership, you and Norm McPhee, and what it was like to be working together at the Guild. And I wonder how much you were working together versus each of you busy in your own spheres.
Yeah, it was interesting because Norm was very particular in some things and very open to change in others. He never came in. The first play I directed, he came in, and I saw him taking thousands of notes. And then he never gave them to me, which was weird. I expected that. And so there are many things he was particular about and many things he would give freedom to. And it took me a little while to know that and what he wanted and what was going on. And it is so funny now. It's like it's always easy to complain about your parents until you have kids. And then you go, oh, I see why they did it that way. And so, you know, again, being a hotshot kid and he's the old guy, you think, oh, well, you know, when I do this, I'm going to do it this way. Well, no, you don't. And you find out that there was a reason why Norm did it that way and what happened and how things were addressed. And I think what I learned a lot from Norm is when to get involved and when not to get involved. And early on, you want to solve all the problems. You want to do this and hit it with a hammer and take care of it. And you know, things resolve themselves on their own sometimes, and you don't have to get involved. And saw the way that his love for the volunteers and what he did and his hard work. You know, he led by example. He was there all the time. And I remember one time when I – and then so I was there all the time. And then I had a child, and I said, Norm, I got to have a day off. I don't care what day that is, but you pick, and because I got responsibilities to do that. And so I said, well, you take Saturday, and then I'll take Sunday. And everybody's like, ooh, Norm's taking a day off. How about that? And so then he so we started doing stuff like that. And but I still remember both of us locking up at night. And it's like, okay, well, both of us don't have to stay to the end, you know. And so he, I think over time he turned over his family to me, you know, and because, and I'm going through that now, you know. Well, I'll lock up. I'll do this. I'll do that. Well, other people can do that. And he didn't do it out of being controlling. He just did it because it was his job, and it meant something to him, and this place meant something to him. And so he, over time, was more trusting, I think, and I hope to be the same when when I turn over the keys to someone else, that I can know it's in good hands and be more trusting. So anyway, it was an interesting relationship. He didn't come in and we didn't evaluate each other's shows and, you know, say, well, you should have done this different or done that different. We kind of just accepted and supported.
Yeah, that's always my impression. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today with Doug Instanis, managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild, looking back over his 30 years with the Guild. He was hired there in 1993, again, in what position?
I was assistant, associate artistic director, and director of marketing.
Right. And 8 years after that, when Norm McPhee retired, although Norm continued to do some directing there and so on, so he by no means vanished from the scene, but then you essentially stepped in. Can you just tell us what that felt like 8 years in to become the overall director of the Theater Guild? Did that feel like a momentous shift, or did that feel just like a natural next step?
A little bit of both, I think. I was hoping that that would take place. Excuse me. And you know, I talked to Norm about that, and about, you know, at some point, I would like to step into that position. I had some opportunities to go other places, and you know, I really wanted to stay at the Theater Guild. I knew by that time I knew the people. I knew where the bodies were buried. Excuse me. And I knew the situation. I knew the board. I knew how to direct on a thrust stage, you know. And so I really wanted to stay. I didn't want to go anywhere else where the unknowns were. And so taking over was a big responsibility. It was a lot of work. But I had a huge support from the board, and the volunteers were rooting for me. And it was great. I can't look back with any regrets on anything. It was a fun journey. And again, I think once I had the big office, and I went from the storeroom in the basement that was made into an office, but was really a storeroom, to upstairs where you become, you know, you're going to Rotary and you're going to meetings and you represent the Theater Guild. It was a big responsibility, and I was very grateful for the opportunity and honored, and kind of living my dream. I got to stay at one place and make a difference and be in theater. When many of my colleagues, people that I've worked with, went from job to job or they're out of theater. You know, there was this impression that professional theater, you know, got to do professional theater, and community theater is not the goal, right? But they've never been in community theater. They don't understand being part of making a community better and the joys of watching families and friends and colleagues work together. And, you know, after I got here, I didn't want to do professional theater. I wanted to be here. Because these people were here for the right reasons. They weren't here for money. They weren't here for fame. They were here, in my mind, for the right reasons. And so it just became an honor to be the only one in the room getting paid. I feel kind of guilty sometimes that these people are working so hard and I'm getting paid. So it was a fun journey. And, you know, you keep learning and growing. And you think to yourself, oh, I get it now. I understand why this made Norm nuts. And you know, I'd like to go back and tell him, hey, you know, you were right. So,
well, and of course, a lot of people maybe misunderstand community theater because there's a whole lot of different kinds of community theater. Right. And what at least a lot of people say about the Racine Theater Guild is it is a community theater in that, very much in that sense of community, but it also delivers a very fine product, or at least most of the time. I mean, at a really high level. And that balancing act is not always, maybe not even often achieved.
Right. Well, you try to give people a professional experience in a community setting. You want the product to be good because you need the audience to come, and you need the actors to feel proud of their work, and the technicians to be working on state-of-the-art equipment and being proud of that and learning something. So, and I think everybody has that attitude. Everybody, I don't get too much, well, it's just community theater. They have high standards. They push themselves. They push each other. You know, sometimes they get mad at me about that. But in the long run, it's like a football coach. You want to win, right? You want, nobody likes to lose. So I think everybody takes pride in the work that we do. And all you have to do is walk in the building and you go, oh, my, this is different. This is not standard community theater. Our facility alone rivals many, many professional groups.
Right. And, of course, you want a product that belongs there. I mean, that belongs on a stage like that. Yeah. So the... I mean, I think there's probably aspects of being artistic director that the ordinary person doesn't quite understand. I mean, but I think in general we get the sense of, you know, you are responsible for ultimately the artistic product that is presented to the public. What about the management part of it? You are the artistic and managing director of the Racine Theater Guild. What are some of the aspects of that part of the job that probably would not occur to the ordinary member of the audience?
Well, I think they work hand in hand in the sense that I need to make one more dollar than I spend. And so as artistic director, I want to do this because I feel this way, and I need this much money because I, to make this costume work. And so I'm constantly wearing two hats. what can I afford? What do I need? Is the financial trade-off of that? I also, as managing director, I work for the audience. I work for will they come? Will this product sell? Mm. And I think the hardest part of the managing part is, and it's interesting because I told Norm this at my interview, and I think that's why I got hired. I have a hotel and restaurant background, and hotel rooms and seats in a theater are very similar market share. They have one day. You can't sell the seat twice. You can't sell the hotel room twice. So once that day is passed, your earning potential is down. So first thing I did as managing artistic director is pack the theater full of activities. So we do about 165 shows a year, and then we have 365 days in a year. So the math is kind of easy to figure out how many performances we do, because we can't sell that seat twice. So we have to fill every day. We're dark. It's like an airline. You know, every time that seat goes unoccupied, you've lost money. So unfortunately, theater is a business, and I've really had to use my management skills to make sure that works. And thank goodness I have a board that cares about finances and investments and interest rates and insurance, all of those things. You know, this week I'm working at the parking lot is being repaved, so we have to do that. So I'm involved in that. We need to repaint the front of the building. We have, you know, the water heater breaks. You know, all of those things that happen in a normal business. And
all the things for which you got an MFA.
Right. Yeah. And the challenge is most of those people I work with are volunteers, you know, cleaning up the costume shop, working all of those things. In the professional world, you just hire somebody, and they do their job or they get fired. In my world, you know, all of these things, we're providing experiences for people, for the costume people to have that experience. And so it's a very different management style, but it's never dull. So, you know, one minute I'm working about who's going to unplug the toilets, and the next thing I'm figuring out what musical we're going to be doing at the end of the year. So I think it's great because it gives me a bigger picture on everything. That being manager and being artistic director, anything that goes wrong is my fault. There's no blame someone else. We don't get to blame some business manager or the managing director or the artistic director. They picked a bad play. Well, they didn't market it right. Well, it all comes down to me. So the buck stops with me, and to a certain degree in our situation, I think that's the way it's supposed to. So you know, like you asked before, some of the things I enjoy doing more than other things. Of course, I enjoy being in rehearsal and directing and being part of the creative process. But also, it's kind of cool to see the parking lot get built and know that that's going to be around for a long time. And we did the front stairs, and we did handicap ramps, and we remodeled something. And you go, wow, that's cool. I was a part of that. So anyway, it's never a dull moment at the Theater Guild for me.
So let's give you a chance to look back over 30 years and maybe think about a couple of productions that especially stand out in your mind as maybe things that were especially pleasurable, especially fun, or maybe productions that represented gigantic challenges that were surmounted. And I don't know, probably among your memorable productions are also ones where things fell apart and didn't go well. I don't know that you want to talk about those so much, but I mean, when you look back over the 30 years, are there a few productions that stand out for particular reasons that you feel like talking about?
Yeah, it's hard. Somebody else asked me that, and, you know, I always say my favorite show is the one I'm working on now. I mean, obviously Cemetery Club stands out because it's your first show. Whenever you do something for the first time, I think that stands out. You and I have talked about Les Mis. I never... You know, is that really an opera? I consider it an opera because there's no spoken words. Other people think it's a musical. You know, you can fight about that. But that was a first for me when you do something like that. I did 12 Angry Jurors, where the 12 people were on stage all the time. That had unbelievable challenges for that. You just remember kooky things. We had a fire during Godspell where we stopped the show and Brian Schalk had to put out the burning bush, as it were, when something got caught on a lighting instrument and started a fire during the show. You remember that. You remember Beauty and the Beast, where the lights went out and we had to cancel the show and the cast was on stage singing songs to the audience until we knew if the lights were going to come on. And then we did the MASH thing where we took cars and pointed them towards the buildings and turned the headlights on so people could walk out. I know these aren't artistic moments, but they're things that, you know, stand out. I think the hard thing is because all shows have wonderful moments on them and things you're going to remember. And unfortunately, you know, after 100 shows, they pass away. But what I remember the most of is the people. Like, I don't remember a lot of the blocking or what happened in Cemetery Club, but I clearly remember the cast and the people. And they become part of my family now. And I always say, you know, plays come and go, but the people are the people that I remember. I get to see their families. I get to see them get married. I get to see them have kids, and maybe their kids are involved in shows with them. And I've seen grandparents perform with their grandchild, and husband and wives performing together. Those are the things that stick in my mind. That, you know, I know people get mad at me because I see them as 10-year-olds, and now they're adults with kids. And, you know, I make jokes about that, and because I still see them as a 10-year-old.
Sure.
You know, and it's so those things I remember. I think what will go down most in my mind is what happened when it was taken away from me during COVID. I don't think I will ever remember that sense of loneliness of sitting in a theater. You know, since 1986, I had been doing theater, and it was taken away from me. For a year and a half, it was taken, and I'm just sitting there, and it was helpless. And that sense of loneliness, that's why I think I'm scared of retiring, because, you know, that sense of loss was just profound.
Palpable.
And I didn't realize how much I missed it until it was taken away. You know, you complain about this show, and you work so hard, and yada, yada, yada. And then when it was taken away, you kind of say, well, I want it back. So,
including all the headaches.
Yeah.
We should say that, I mean, one thing that is pretty amazing, and I know you don't ever take full credit for this, maybe not even most of the credit for this, but the fact that the Racine Theater Guild was able to emerge from COVID, from that hiatus, in remarkably robust financial shape was amazing because, of course, a lot of other performing arts institutions of one kind or another shut down altogether, and some closed down forever.
Right.
And you survived COVID.
And I tell you, that was such a heartwarming moment when I figured out that that was going to happen, because little old ladies sending us $5, people getting their, you know, $200 stimulus check, turning it over to us. I always joke that we had a great business model. We planned a season, we canceled it, and then we kept the money. And that happened to us. And we canceled the season, and people donated their money back. And how can we help? And I can't tell you how inspiring that was. And you felt all of a sudden that people cared about the Theater Guild, and it was part of their lives, and they wanted to do whatever they could to make that possible. So it was very inspiring, and we were able to come out of it strong.
Right. This is probably a good time to mention someone who has been a very important partner for you over the last few years, the woman who shares the office right next to you.
Oh, Jocelyn. Jocelyn Fish has done a wonderful job selling the theater and, you know, marketing, development, making community contacts, writing grants. A lot of those grants got us through the dark times. And reaching out to communities for sponsorships and playbill ads and, you know, the business aspect of it. What we call non-earned income, which is very, very vital to a theater, because a snowstorm, all of a sudden people won't come. Rain won't come. Something happens in the community, they don't come. You need to make up for that with what we call non-earned or non-performance income. And that's her whole job, is to try to make sure that we're seen in a certain way and that people know about us. And so remember us in your will, and so she does an excellent job.
So this season that is coming up, which number season is it? Do you happen to remember off the top of your head?
Well, we have a little debate about that because we were shut down. So what does that do for us? I'm not sure. Are we in 86, 87, 85? We'll have to ask Jocelyn, and she can tell me for sure.
Okay.
What?
Well, the Guild has been around a long, long time. In fact, you know, even before the time of Norm McPhee, of course, and there's a whole lot of
1938 giants. 1938 is technically our starting date. So.
Right. So what do you want to tell us about this upcoming season? We just have a couple of minutes, but do you want to at least kind of run down the titles for us or whatever you want to do?
Well, I just hope people come. We still have season tickets. We do comedies, dramas. We've got some mysteries going on, Dial In for Murder. We've got some heartwarming comedies now and then, Cemetery Club, Seasonal Allergies, Sky Girl, Cabaret. You know, we say we're lighting up lives at all stages. We have, from young to old, we've got something for everybody. Little Mermaid we're bringing back, which is a big hit for families. And then we have lots of different. We have a comedy season, which is a little more adult this year as we move into, some adult comedies. We have jazz
concerts. We should make sure people understand that's not comedy plays. That's comedians on the stage.
Right, yeah. Comedians on. We've got, a jazz series. We have a signature spotlight concert series. And again, we run the Racine Children's Theater, all the Packy plays that people have been going to for generations. So, again, to get 165 performances in a year, we do a lot of different things for a lot of different people. We can even rent our facilities. So it's a great place to every weekend you can see something else. You can see a comedy show, a children's show, and then we just got done doing a class presentation where we had 50 kids in Aristocats Junior. And they spent 3 weeks here rehearsing it and then performing it. They were just so adorable. The next generation is coming up, and so we're excited about that. We have theater classes, so we got a lot of things going on.
And you can check it out at racinetheater.org. And, of course, you can also call the Racine Theater Guild at 633-1250 or 633-4218, area code 262, to get more information on everything that is going on, including the Cemetery Club, which opens on September 15th.
Correct.
And at the helm, Doug Instanis, celebrating 30 years with the Racine Theater Guild and his 100th production that he has directed. Doug, thank you for coming in today to share some thoughts about your life at the Racine Theater Guild, and best wishes for the next 30 years.
Thank you.
Doug Instanis, Artistic and Managing Director of the Racine Theater Guild. Tomorrow on the morning show, writer Doug McIntyre, and he'll be talking about his intriguing new novel, which is called Frank's Shadow, which was inspired in part by his own father's deep love of the singer Frank Sinatra. On Thursday, Nan Calvert is joining us for her monthly visit to the program, and with her will be Dr. Marissa Jablonski, Executive Director of the Freshwater Collaborative. And on Friday, Lydia Pine, author of a really fun book called Genuine Fakes, How Phony Things Teach Us About Real Stuff.
In Kenosha and Racine.
The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. And don't forget that you can subscribe to the morning show podcast to enjoy a different morning show 7 days a week. Now to look at our weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. Today's going to be a mostly sunny day with a high of 83 degrees. There is, however, a 40% chance for some showers and storms developing, mainly after 3 this afternoon into the early evening. We will have an overnight low of 62 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high of 84 degrees. And the 5-day weather trend includes another chance for showers and storms on Friday. Temperatures, high temperatures remaining in the 80s. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.